an interview with Herbert D. Lewin at 2904 East 2nd Street, Long Beach, California. The date is May 23rd, 1985, and the interviewer is Ann Andrews.
Iteration. My father, H.H. Lewin, was Welsh-born. He came to this country and he was quite young, and his older brother preceded him and got him here. And he met my mother in Denison, Texas, and they were married down there. And her brother's name was Vern Dumas, and later in life, why, they became good friends and partners in business and so on and so forth. And at the time of this oil strike, my father, my uncle was on a trip someplace, so my father, who usually went with my uncle, who was the leader of the two, you might say, came on here and got interested in this thing and picked up a lease about a block down the street from the Discovery Well, and Bill and the two of them, Vern Dumas and he, organized what is called the Umpire Petroleum Corporation, and brought that well in, and that was the start of their operation in Long Beach, in the city of Long Beach, or Signal Hill, I should say. So later, I went over and on the corner, the north east corner of Orange and Willow, they acquired a rather large lease and built the Apex Petroleum Corporation, which was one of the leading money makers of their career down here. And at the same time, they acquired other leases. There's one that I still have some income from called the Simplex over on California, which is on the west side of the cemetery. That well is still producing them. They had a larger lease on the, you might say, the northwest corner of the cemetery over there, directly across from the Jurgens lease. Remember, the Jurgens lease ran along the north boundary of the Sunnyside Cemetery. All these wells are in there. And they eventually organized these various companies that they had created and built these wells. They were independent operators and experienced in over in the Richfield area and along the Plenty Hills and in there. And this time, of course, I'm just a little boy when this went on. They were both friends of V.L. Doheny and others in Los Angeles, but basically they were Los Angelinos, and they came to Long Beach in 1921, and of course my residence would be dated from that time on. However, I was only here intermittently and on trips.
Have they always been in the oil business?
When he came from Wales, his older brother, Dick Lewin, was the treasurer of Wakefield Fetter Grocery Company, which is a large wholesale grocery house in Fort Worth, Texas. That's the headquarters of it. And his first job in the United States was traveling salesman for that grocery house in Oklahoma Territory, before it was a state. And he worked out of the Denison office of it, and I was born during our later in that town on the same street, West Gandy, that Ike Eisenhower was born in, if that means anything. And then in 1915, my uncle and father came out to California with her family and set up an insurance firm in San Francisco. We lived in Piedmont at the time. And then we moved down to Los Angeles, and from that time on we put wandering around. We lived in Los Angeles, and the oil business started up in the various places in Southern California they were in it, and Long Beach was their most successful area, and that's where I started work, and later, when I had to go to work, and does that tell you anything? Or?
Yes, because we're always interested in who were the operators. I have a list here that came from Walter Case's book of the principal oil producers at Signal Hill in 1935. And so when you say Apex Petroleum, it's on there. It says at that time they had 25 wells.
Yeah, well, that's the Apex. 1935, let's see.
Yeah.
During the Depression. I didn't work for them at the time because I was building with aviation and that sort of thing. I quit. When I graduated from high school, I learned to fly that summer.
Mm-hmm.
In August the 22nd, to be exact, I soloed in the corner of 125th and Western in Los Angeles at what was then Rogers Airport. All of the airports in Southern in Los Angeles were in a string running from West Friends north to along Western Avenue. The next one beyond Rogers was belonged to a friend of mine, Jack Fry, you might have heard of. He was president and founder of the Transcontinental Western Air, TWA, and a man named Richter and a man named Ham Hamilton. Three of them were the originators of that airline, which later became the Lindbergh line and the TWA that you know today. And of course, in the days of promotion of this airport out here, and one thing or another, Jack Fry, being a friend of mine, was very helpful and interesting other people in the industry. He was very well thought of. His brother eventually, Don Fry, started a ground school down on Broadway, just off of American Avenue to the west. How far do we go with this kind of... This doesn't seem to me to be a great deal of value.
Well, it's a value when I can compare it with other interviews that we have about oil, for example. That was one area. When we do an interview, we do like to do what we call a whole life interview.
Mm-hmm.
So when I spoke with you before, you referred to your three careers, and so I thought I'd better find out a little bit about your first career and why you were in that career.
Well, I went to work in the oil business in summertime and that sort of thing on rigs. I never was much of a success in it because, frankly, I wasn't particularly interested. What little money I made in royalties, buying and selling royalties. I had various and sundry jobs from digging ditches and shoveling sump holes and driving trucks and roughnecking and various things that go to make up an oil man. But through it all, I had this aviation bent, and I kept going back to aviation again. And as a result, the real success in the oil business, in my family at least, was my father, H.H. Lloyd.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the man. He was the Secretary Treasurer of the Apex Petroleum Corporation from its inception. Vern Dumas was president and general manager of it until the 30s. And T.M. Deal Oil and Gas Company in Kansas, father and uncle also operated in Fredonia and got those fields down there in Kansas. Of course, I'm talking about the teens now. Well, pre-World War One time. And they, I don't know just how to express this thing. There's so little, I had so little bearing on the thing because, frankly, I was not a success in the business. I made a living, and one time I had to take a job where from 6 o'clock at night until 6 o'clock in the morning during this was in the Depression years, 1930-something, probably 32, a year or so before the earthquake. And on Signal Hill and Wardlow Road in order to make a living, and I got $4 a day for that task, and I lived very well on the $120 a month that it gave me and left me free during the day to get out and do something else and get going again. But I can answer you a lot of questions, particularly about people, but I don't know just how to go about organizing my thoughts because I never have been well organized to start with.
Well, suppose I suggest a few names, and if you remember anything about these people from the business, you might
want to
say something about them.
I can tell you one thing. He can tell you more of a general nature, particularly about the people. Now, for instance, we were talking about Martin Becker today.
Yes.
Martin was as more famous probably than Becker was, Elmer Becker, but Martin is dead and Elmer Becker is alive, and they were the originators, I don't know which one invented it, of the drilling indicator, which enabled people that was using rotary drilling, which this field was one of the first all rotary drill fields, as far as I know, in the world, that enabled them to measure the pressure on the bit face in the ground by a series of tension on the block lines. This was a repetition, and they do so many points, and the driller was given his instructions to so many points, and this resulted in less loss of drill stems and what have you, and enabled deeper wells and so on and so forth, and really put rotary drilling on its feet. And those two men were the originators and the beginning of that, as so far as I know. And Elmer Becker's still alive, although he's in his 90s. He did live up on Virginia. Where does he live now?
He's nowhere in Kill Hill,
but
he's still perfectly.
We have
spoken
with Mr. Becker.
Oh, you have?
Yeah.
Yes, but he didn't want to be taped.
Well?
He loaned me a copy of his history of Martin
Becker
Company, so
that tells us that. Well, he's, in my opinion, is one of the best authorities on the early development of the supply, oil well supply, and drilling generally, and not only Long Beach, but in the world for that matter, because we're talking about rotary drilling now instead of the old up and down motions.
When you referred to, in our previous conversation, you referred to briefly to Jim O'Donnell. I mean, you knew Gladys, of course.
Jim O'Donnell was an oil man on Signal Hill, and is the father of young Jim O'Donnell, who married Gladys. I've forgotten Gladys' name. Do you know it? I mean, of course, you know who she was.
Yes, yes. Did you know any of the Hancocks, or Will Reed?
I know one, the youngest Hancock. I was a stockholder in Hancock Oil Company, and on account of him, and I never will forget when they had that something happened. I was at sea coming home from Japan. I got in touch with him over the radio phone, and now I've forgotten what. Yeah, that's it. No, when the refinery burned down. Yeah, I was halfway between Yokohama and Hawaii when that happened, and I got him on the phone, and he told me to not quit worrying about it. Everything would be all right, which was quite a relief. I was stationed in, that would have been 1958, wouldn't it?
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it's in May of 1958.
Did you know Jack Hurley?
No, I know his name, but I can't say that I knew him.
I'm giving a name.
Drilling Company.
Yes, Originally, I think he was in pipes, selling pipes
and stuff. Sherry
Evans certainly supplied
Rowe with it. Oh, yeah. That's right.
The London Stick and Tool Company?
I don't know that.
I don't remember his name. Maybe that's one question that my associate raised. Still with oil development in Mexico, was there any, did you know if any of the Long Beach people were involved in some of that? Or was there any flying back and forth?
There was. Quite a bit of involvement, but at that time I was wholly preoccupied with aviation and I didn't pay a lot of attention to it.
So did you know anything about Easter Oil Control?
About what?
Easter Oil Control.
No.
He's done some research on that. I'm not the authority on that, my associate. Were you at all involved in any oil in the harbor?
37. No, not at all.
Okay.
Unfortunately.
Maybe we should talk a little bit about your other junior chamber activities that we didn't go into in any detail last time. And I know that Barry's talking a lot about 1938 and the 50th anniversary celebration of Long Beach for the city, and I believe you and Bill Brooks and Barry helped get some state queens for that event. State societies.
You might say that my entire time spent in the Junior Chamber of Commerce, and all the things that I did were mainly because of Barry Nabors. I am a great admirer of Barry Nabors. I don't think in my time I know of a single individual who has contributed as much to this community or anywhere near as much to this community as Barry Nabors has.
Without taking credit.
Oh, he's a very unassuming person. It's hard to pin him down. But to show you what I mean, let's talk about this aviation again.
Okay.
I came down from Signal Hill and joined the Junior Chamber of Commerce because of a man named Hawk, Pal Hawk. Rollin was his correct name, and I called him Pal. That was the name that he was known of in the oil business. He, like myself, had a father who was an oil man. And Pal went to work for the Junior Chamber of Commerce about a year before Barry became president of it. And it was during that time, either just before or after we got into the act, that Pal prevailed upon me to come down and join the Junior Chamber of Commerce, which I did, and thereby became better acquainted with Darrell Nabors, and There are, now you're going to get into some controversy. In those days, we had a repeated performance of lack of being able to attract any real development to our airport. It was strictly a flying school activity. And with the exception of the Navy and a bit later the Army Reserves, why, it was wholly the type of operation that Kay Doherty will tell you about, and the originator of the airport, Doherty himself. But turn it off just a minute. This is somewhat controversial, and you will find people that have different opinions, but without mentioning any names, most of the lack of development out there at the airport of any great size was because of inept handling of certain people. For instance, the consolidated fleet, Rube Fleet, came to Long Beach and tried to start up a factory down here, and he met with no success, and finally went down to San Diego and formed the consolidated setup that you know down there at this point. And Rube was the originator of the fleet biplane, which was the trainer of the Navy, primary trainer of the Navy at the time, and also his first big production in San Diego was the Liberator bomber, the first one of which he sent up here to land through arrangements with me, and the guy was a little bit short. We only had a 4,000 foot runway to start with, and he was a little bit short, and the thing sunk into the mud just before it hit the end of the runway, and there we sat with a $1 million airplane of some kind and thing. But anyway, Fleet got up here and got it out of the mud, and we got it going and gone. But anyway, Barry Nabors, as president of the Junior Chamber of Commerce, was representative of the Junior Chamber on the Chamber of Commerce board. And during this time, they lost this deal with Fleet, which wasn't a new occurrence in Long Beach at all. Happened several times before. And as a result, I always thought they decided that they would turn the aviation activities over to the Junior Chamber of Commerce. And Darrell Nabors assumed as president. And he talked to me, talked to Elf Hastings. We also had I'll think of his name in a minute, another man who was on his board as co-chairman. Darrell's Darrell's organization consisted of a board member as a co-chairman with a general member of the organization. And Hopping was the general member, and I can't think of his name, but I'll think of it before it's over with. Anyway, they started this thing of moving the hangars back and extending this runway on the south side of the thing, and they created a good committee, and amongst others, I joined it, and we went to work on the development of the airport from that time on. And it was through his initiative and his ability to direct and lead that we really got started and got anything at all. Now, Hastings had a good background and was a good reporter. He had a column on the newspaper. His father was one of the originators of the Long Beach Post Telegram. And one thing led to another. For instance, one day I was down at the junior chamber office. There it was upstairs in the meeting of the chamber board, and I got a telephone call from Clarence Young. And Clarence Young was the first Undersecretary of Commerce for Air, the predecessor of the CAA. And at that time he was the Pacific Operations Vice President for Pan-American Airways, who operated flying boats out of San Francisco to Australia and the Orient across the Pacific. And his question was, he says, how come you're talking about building an airport down there and you're not thinking anything about Pan Am? And I said, that's a good question. He said, I hear you have a pretty good harbor, and words of these effects and what have you. And he says, I'm coming out down there on my way to East. And he said, I'd like to talk to you. So he came in a day or two later, and we went around and looked the harbor over and what have you. And I prevailed upon Foster and some of the others to design a landing place for seaplanes, where they could taxi up and have their, just something similar to the Navy landing down there where the landing boats came in. In fact, it was just to the west of that particular facility down there, and they put it on the plan, and they had it. And of course, one thing, by the time we really got interested in it, why, flying boats were a long thing of the long past, and Pan Am and everybody else was flying land planes, because which was the original concept. Lindbergh had flown the Atlantic and demonstrated that you didn't need wheels to fly across water and what have you. And
well, that's one thing I was going to ask you, because there is a plan in the master plan.
That's right. That's right. That was put in there. There was really no use for it. By the time this thing here was developed, the use of flying boats was almost forgotten. Of course, in World War II, don't forget, the original patrol boats were all flying boats. And the ones that went up and down this coast and what have you after Pearl Harbor were, one of them was flown by my brother-in-law, later Rear Admiral James H. King, class of 30 at Annapolis. And he landed one of those same boats out on French Frigate Shoals and taxied the thing all the way back to Honolulu. Something happened. They couldn't get off the name. But anyway, in spite of all that and the creation of the Hughes Hall, they've gone by the wayside, and today, as you know it, there's been very little, and that's why it is. But this was the first and only, as far as I know, regional master plan of airports that had an intelligent approach to the aviation problem. We had such things as runways that were so long that you wouldn't believe it, that you couldn't see from one end to the other on account of the curvature of the earth. And those runways today are, one of them's up in March, 12,000 feet long, and there's a certain loss of sight when you get when you're down on the ground looking down, and I'm not talking about from the top of a of an airplane where you're up above the thing. So that was where that came from, and yes, it was considered to be a part of the master plan of airport development for Los Angeles County. And Frosty Martin was one of the ones that was definitely responsible for inclusion in this thing here.
Well, there's several clippings in your scrapbook talking about the proposed space, and one comment about Jim Hossam attempting, saying that this would be a good site for the seaplane base, I guess, when he was on the Board of Public Commissioners at that time.
That's right.